Okay, folks, this is Elvin Shamroth here once again with our penultimate for the year teleconference. This is the second last one. And after next time, we'll all be done for the season. I need to apologize at the outset. My voice is recovering. I lost my voice a few days ago. Feeling fine, but I sound terrible. So please forgive me, but I'm sure you can still hear me clearly, and that's the important thing. Even at this late date, there are always new arrivals and new attendees to our teleseminar. So today, I'll just explain how it works. We've got three people who have submitted a case on their case list or a question or concern, and outside of just reading through them beforehand, I've done no preparation. I do that intentionally because I want it to be really as spontaneous as possible. And it's not scripted, and it'll go, the discussion will go wherever it goes. So with that out the way, let's just first see if our three active participants are with us. Firstly, Matt. Matt, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you so much and welcome. I appreciate you joining us. Excuse me. Second is Rishika. Rishika, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
And welcome to you too. Thank you so much for joining. And finally, Ramsey. Ramsey, are you there?
Yeah.
And welcome to you too. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right. So, Matt, you're up first just because on the email that I've got, your issue is the one that comes up first. And I read it through, and I'm so pleased you asked this question. I get asked it by a number of candidates, but I've never addressed it at a teleseminar. And I think it's really important that everyone should hear this. So, Matt, I'm going to throw it open to you. Just very briefly, describe to us what your issue, what your concern is, and then we'll discuss it.
Okay, great. I happened in a run of bad luck this year that the year I'm submitting my case list, I happen to have four vaginal cuff breakdowns after hysterectomy. I mean, I know that happens. It is a risk factor for hysterectomy, but normally does not happen to me this frequently. So having four on my case list is a little bit of a concern because I'm afraid they're going to say, what are you doing? Do you know how to sew a vaginal cuff up? One of my cases is someone who had intercourse too early. Another one is someone who had, like, a cellulite.
Was that despite counseling against early intercourse on your part?
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay. And okay. Then, carry on. Mm-hmm.
And then two of them, or I guess two out of the three, were normal routine follow-up but just had cuff breakdowns. And so I kind of want to just prepare myself for, you know, how my best defense against that, because I didn't do anything differently with these patients. One thing I did do differently is three of these were a robotic hysterectomy, and at the time I was using a quill suture, and I've gotten away from that now, and I've started using an interrupted vicryl suture on the cuff. But one of them was a straight stick TLH that I did, and we used like a running vicryl with our, you know, from each side. So anyway, I go after me for that, and I kind of want to know the best way to
Sure. So look, let me tell you, your presentation was at the very least decent, but it can be much more powerful. And okay, before we get into the specifics of your case, I want to broaden it out a lot for everyone who's listening in.
Yeah.
All of you have, in various facets, on various facets of your cases, you've got complications. You've got issues that happened this year in collecting cases that may or may not be common for you. The point that I want to make is, let's take the example of vaginal cuff. And Matt alluded to it. To have four vaginal cuff dehiscences in 1 year, I'm going to be harsh, Matt, but that's a personal epidemic. It's way more than you would expect. And the point that I want to make is, for all of you, if you've got a complication X, and you've got it one time, it's not the end of the world. Everyone has complications. Even if you've got two cases of complication X, it can be explained away. It was just unfortunate. But once you start getting higher numbers of the same complication, three or four or more, it becomes increasingly unbelievable for the examiner to think this was just bad luck, okay?
Right.
And so the examiner will approach you, in this case, Matt, with your dehiscences and the rest of your complications. If you've got more than, let's say, two, they're going to approach you with the notion, something's not right here. Why is this happening? What's going on? And they're going to want to drill down on it. And that's exactly what you want to discuss here. And it's totally appropriate. So the more you have an issue of multiple cases with the same complication, the more you're forced to address it. And what I would say to you, Matt, in this particular case, and anyone listening in who's got similar issues, take the bull by the horns. The examiner might see the first one on the case list, and he sees cuff dehiscence, or she sees cuff dehiscence. They can ask you, what happened here? And it's a totally appropriate and legitimate question. What you need to do is show that you're on top of this, you're totally comfortable discussing it, and your opening line should be, by all means, I'm happy to discuss this case, but let me share with you, I got to tell you, in this year of collecting cases, I actually had four wound dehiscences, and for me, this was very, very upsetting. I regard it as a personal one-man epidemic. But what happened was, and then you go into that case, and you go and describe why you think it happened, and in very short order, you got to say why you think the second, third, fourth one happened, which you did. And the key thing is to show, describe what is your technique of closing the vault. What are the alternatives? What are the pros and cons of each of those alternatives? And in the case of the vault, by the way, also be prepared. And any of you who've got a vault dehiscence on your cases, be prepared to discuss how do you sterilize the vagina preoperatively? Do you use chlorhexidine, povidine, iodine? What do you use and why? Be prepared to have that conversation as well. But there was one other thing I wanted to say. I just slipped my mind now. Just bear with me one second, folks. You've got to show the examiner that you recognize that this is an issue. And once you made that recognition, you started looking, what are the possible causes? And you've got to think aloud. As you share this with the examiner, you say to him, you know, I had four cases of this, and by the time I hit my second one already, I started questioning, what is it that I might be doing? And I looked at this possibility, I looked at that possibility, I also thought of X, Y, and Z. This is you thinking aloud. And I've come down to the conclusion, in my case, it was most likely X and Y. And as a if you can do this, you may or may not be able to do this, but as a consequence of this self-analysis, I've made a subtle change in the way I do things in order to avoid a recurrence of this issue. So you acknowledge the problem, show how you person try to investigate it, and how you've adapted your surgery practice to try and reduce the risk. And that's for any complication, by the way. But how much more so when you've got multiple cases of the same complication? Does that make sense to you, Matt, in broad terms?
Oh, for sure.
Would you
be
comfortable with that?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, just a few specific questions specific to Vault. You've got to be able to discuss how you counsel the patient post-op,
mm-hmm.
why you chose the closure that you did, what are the other options that you could do, what are the pros and cons. They can get you into a conversation on urinary injury, because if you take two bigger bites laterally, you can catch the ureters.
Right.
And I mentioned preoperative antisepsis. Be prepared to talk about prophylactic antibiotics. And I think that's the gist of it. Do you have any other questions on this issue, Matt?
No, that's good. I think the bull by the horns approach makes a lot of sense.
Just by the way, even if you didn't agree with me,
right.
I'm telling you, the examiner is going to see it. It comes across far better if you bring it to their attention than if they get a sense you're trying to hide it and they got to dig around for it. You come across much, much better by taking it to them.
Okay.
Okay.
I like that. Yeah.
All right. Anything else on your end?
No, that's extremely helpful. I can sleep a little better now.
Okay, good. And just by the way, for all of your complications like this, if you're well prepared, as Matt, I expect you will be, you'll go over this, you'll practice it. If you're well prepared to handle this kind of response, you actually turn from the exam point of view, you turn a potential negative into a very strong positive, because the examiner will leave the conversation with Matt thinking, you know, this guy, he's level-headed. He had a problem. He looked into it. He addressed it in a mature, professional manner. He made the appropriate changes. This guy is safe. This guy is good. And this is what makes a case like this so wonderful. So I'm actually happy for you from the exam point of view. This is good. Okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome, Matt. Very good. Rashika, you're up next. Rashika, I see you took a screenshot of this one particular case. So why don't you go ahead and present it to everyone, and then we can talk about it.
Okay. So this is a 37-year-old para 2 who presented with heavy menstrual bleeding and chronic pelvic pain since menarche, but worsened since her last childbirth 2 years prior. Workup was significant for tenderness in the posterior fornix on exam and a 3.3-centimeter right complex cyst on ultrasound. I discussed the possible diagnosis of endometriosis or adeno with the patient. She tried both combined oral contraceptive pills and progesterone only. And discontinue them due to unacceptable mood changes. She declined an IUD due to the pain she previously had the exam that I did. I discussed potential diagnostic laparoscopy for evaluation and possible ablation of endometriosis. I also discussed potential endometrial ablation, and I even talked to her about an IUD placement while she was in the OR. However, she declined all of this. She requested definitive management with a hysterectomy. I did discuss with her that the pain may not be relieved completely, and she was fine with that. So in the surgery, I saw that they had placed, whoever did her tubal before had done the Filchi clips, and so they were dislodged. One was attached to the right ovary with dense adhesions, and one was in the posterior cul-de-sac, and, actually near the urosacral, and that was also encased in adhesions. So I lysed those, I removed them. So I feel that was the reason for her pain. The path was totally negative. And this is last year, so I saw her for an annual, and she is doing great. But I just feel like since the path is negative, I may have come across as, you know, too aggressive removing her uterus. But that's what she requested.
Okay, so now I understand your issue. Your concern is you took this relatively young patient, I mean, she's 37, you said, to the office for a hysterectomy, for chronic pelvic pain and bleeding, and basically came back with nothing. And you feel bad. Yeah. So, you know, this is common. There are a lot of issues I want to discuss about this, because a lot of you listening in have similar issues. Number one, you've got bleeding and you've got pain. You've got the choice as to how you want to present this case. And you've got to ask yourself now, would it suit you more to present this as a primarily AUB case with failure to respond to conservative therapy? Or was it primarily a chronic pelvic pain case with failure to respond to conservative therapy? Because the presentation is a little bit different. And I would just say, if it's possible, the AUB primary approach is probably a little better, because chronic pelvic pain is so subjective. But if this is truly a chronic pelvic pain case, then present it as such. It's not a problem. Now, the next thing, which is a common theme to 90% of the questions that I get from candidates with problem cases, and I'm sure those of you that have been attending this teleseminar, came to the courses throughout the year, have heard me say this a lot. Be totally open and honest. Okay? So, Shiga, what I would say if I was in your position in the exam, if they asked you to present this case, again, it's a case of taking the bull by the horns. My opening sentence to them would be, you know, this was a very frustrating case for me personally, because although the patient did well, you'll notice this was a 37-year-old who landed up with a hysterectomy for a presumed diagnosis of endometriosis or adenomyosis, and everything turned out to be negative. You see, by that opening sentence, you're laying the groundwork. You're saying, you know, this was not what I expected. Does it mean to say that you were wrong in doing this hysterectomy? Not at all. Firstly, we manage our patients prospectively. We don't have the advantage of hindsight. And B, I would argue that even if you knew that the histology was going to be negative, that would not have been a contraindication, if you could have, to not do the surgery. You needed to do the surgery regardless. And just by the way, in retrospect, don't you think, given what you described, don't you think that the pain could have been due to the fulci clip that was in the posterior fornix?
That's what I think that I was feeling,
yep.
Especially at the...
So say that. Be comfortable to say that. But the key thing, and all of you listening in have chronic pelvic pain and AUB on your case list, two things I want to mention. Number one, especially the younger they are, this is increasingly more important. You must show how you attempted all conservative options of therapy before taking the patient to the OR. Really important. And number two, in the case of hysterectomy due to AUB, if it's not written down on paper, I want to encourage you to mention verbally that you did sample the endometrium and ruled out hyperplasia or endometrial adenocarcinoma, even if she was under 45 or 40. There's a strong argument to be made to do that. So this case is actually pretty straightforward. And I think the way you presented it, Rashika, is, I mean, I embellished it a little bit, but you had the basic gist of it. Be comfortable to say, you know, I was surprised because there was nothing there at the end. I was expecting X and Y. In the end, histology was negative, And I'm left with the notion that it was probably the false eclipse in the cul-de-sac. And I'm happy to say that I've since doing the surgery, I saw her 3 months ago, and she's actually very happy. So that's a nice closure. I just want to add one other thing for you, Rashika. And some of you may have a similar kind of situation. You've got AUB and chronic pelvic pain. You've also got a complex adnexal mass. And when you've got these multiple surgeries, especially if you've got chronic pelvic, the classical combination that I've seen on cases when I review them is chronic pelvic pain and an adnexal mass. You've got to ask yourself the question before you walk in. If the adnexal mass was not there, would you have taken it to the OR for the AUB? And if the AUB was not there, would you have taken it purely for the adnexal mass? Because you've got to make sure that at least one of them is justified. If you've got a 4 or 4.5 centimeter mass, that's not sufficient reason if she's a youngish patient to take her to the OR. So if that's the case, you better make very sure that the AUB or chronic pelvic pain was of sufficient severity to justify the hysterectomy. So that's the particular issue to you, Rashika, but I want every one of you listening in, a significant percentage of you have this kind of thing on your cases. Just make sure you're clear in your mind as to what was the actual reason why you took it to the OR. And ask yourself the question, if the second pathology was not present, would you have still taken it to the OR? And ideally, the answer should be yes. So just keep that in mind. So, Rashika, at the end of the day, have I answered your question or no?
Yeah, I was mainly worried about, you know, because I felt bad, you're right, and so I was worried about coming off as aggressive because, you know, retrospectively, I feel like I was, but you're right.
No, but I'd say you're being too harsh on yourself. And this question that I'm going to raise, folks, you need to ask yourself this question time and time again on multiple patients. Let me pose the question to you, Rashika. You worked this patient up. You know how she presented. You worked up. You did the surgery. You didn't get a comforting response. Let me ask you this question. If you tomorrow were to get the exact same patient knocking on your door, would you treat her any differently? And you've got to be honest with yourself. Go ahead. Would you treat her any differently?
I would.
Okay. So okay, hang on. Most of you, the answer would be no. I would do exactly the same thing. And so you would do it the same way. Yeah, that's the correct answer. I mean, I could still dissect out a no answer with you, but the point that I want to make is, if you ask yourself the question, would I treat her any differently? The answer, typically, and honestly and truthfully, is no. I would do the same thing, and that's the proof that your management is correct. Because even had you have known it, you still would have done it because the symptoms called for it. So, what am I getting at? In the exam, as you're finishing off the presentation of this case, you folks need to say something to the following line, along the following line. I've looked at this case up and down, left and right, and I've come to the conclusion that as frustrating as it was, and I didn't get any positive pathology, I've come to the conclusion that if I were to manage this patient again, I think I would do exactly the same thing. You say that in the exam. It's a very powerful statement, and it shows the examiner that you're confident and comfortable about what you're doing. Does that make sense to you, Rashika?
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. Good. Any other questions on your end about this case?
No. No, I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay, good. You're more than welcome. All right, Ramsey, we've got you next. I've got your email of your screenshot of your case that you sent. But go ahead and present it to everyone listening in, and we'll discuss it.
So my question really is about surgical management in a medically complex patient, and especially also doing a HIST for recurrent postmenopausal bleeding. So this is a 65-year-old patient with gender dysphoria who has never had a hysterectomy prior but has been on testosterone intermittently throughout their life, who came to me with recurrent postmenopausal bleeding. Medical history is complicated by coronary artery disease with multiple stents, type 2 diabetes, on tons of medications, obesity with a BMI of 44. Initially, I did a workup with an ultrasound, which showed a 17-millimeter endometrial stripe. And then I did an office endometrial biopsy, which showed a benign polyp. So I actually did two surgeries on this patient in the course of the year. The first was a hysteroscopy, polypectomy, DNC, and hormonal IUD placement, which is obviously kind of atypical in a postmenopausal patient, but with recurrent bleeding and risk factors for hyperplasia or carcinoma, I talked to them about the benefit of that. Ultimately, this patient continued to have bleeding despite the IUD and was now having new pelvic pain since the initial procedure, and so ultimately decided to do a hysterectomy, and I did that robotically, a robotic TLH, BSO, and cystoscopy. Pathology from that was also benign for everything, so there wasn't anything there, and no hyperplasia or cancer. So, and actually the second surgery was complicated by a readmission for an ileus on post-op day two, but that was managed with an NG tube and the patient did fine. So my questions really is just like, I got a clearance from cardiology and from endocrinology, but it was just like, it just made me nervous at the time of the surgery because this was such a sick person in my mind. And then also doing even like the IUD in a postmenopausal patient, I know is atypical, but it seems like the lesser of two evils for this patient initially. But then the hysterectomy, you know, like, is someone going to fault me for that?
So let me just interrupt you. Let me call in Matt again. Matt, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. You heard Ramsey's presentation. I want your opinion, and be honest. What do you think of the way she described and managed this patient thus far? Be honest.
I mean, I think it sounds appropriate from my end, but it's hard to, you know, imagine yourself in, it's hard to put yourself in someone's shoes during the time when a patient's having a complication.
What do you think about the notion of giving a postmenopausal woman, you gave her the IUD, Ramsey, correct?
Correct.
Progesterone IUD. What do you think about that in a postmenopausal woman with multiple comorbidities? Because I got a sense Ramsey's anxious about that. She feels bad. What do you think?
Did she have an endometrial biopsy?
Yeah, the endometrial biopsy was benign. It turned out to be a polyp.
Yeah,
the polyp, and I saw that on hysteroscopy too.
I think in someone who you're hesitant to take to the OR with multiple comorbidities, an IUD is a very good way to protect the endometrium.
That's what I was hoping you would say. And Ramsey, I wanted you to get my opinion and another opinion. You feel bad because it's unusual, but I would argue you did the right thing here. You wanted to avoid taking this patient to the OR. And just by the way, your expression of concern for taking such a sick patient for a general anesthetic is very comforting to the examiner's ear. It shows you have insight into what are risks related to a patient like this, and you're not going to be gung-ho with a patient like this. So I think your presentation was nice. It was good, not just nice. There are a couple of specific comments I want to mention. And this goes to, what I'm going to send out goes to anyone who's got an elderly patient who goes to the OR. When I say elderly, over 65 or so, okay? you've got to be able to describe how do you work up a patient for the OR? At what age would you insist on an EKG? At what age would you insist on a chest X-ray? When do you get preoperative anesthesia clearance, or do you do it routinely? What labs do you get? When do you do liver function tests, perhaps? Thyroid studies. Be able to describe how you work up a patient. And then also be able to discuss anti-DVT prophylactic measures that you take in these kind of patients. So that's point number one. I'm just going down the list of things that you wrote here. given the fact that you had an endometrial biopsy and you followed up with a hysteroscopy, I'm not saying this is wrong, but they may come to you just for the sake of the argument and say, why did you have to do both? Okay? And this gets into a discussion of the pros and cons of biopsy versus office biopsy versus DNC versus hysteroscopy versus transvaginal ultrasound in postmenopausal bleeding. What are the sensitivities, relative sensitivities? And there's not much difference, by the way. Hysteroscopy obviously is the best, but there's not that much difference between them. So be prepared for that discussion. Any one of you who have a robotic hysterectomy on your case list, excuse me, I'm sorry, it's this post-flu that I'm recovering from. Anyone who's got a robotic case on their case list, you must be able to discuss why you chose to do this with the robot versus conventional laparoscopy. Okay, what are the pros and cons in general? And then specifically in this case, why did you choose robot? What are the pros and cons?
Well, and that's another thing I do just want to bring up too, because like for this
case, sure.
I just feel like, so with a BMI of 44 and it is completely all central for this patient, you know, honestly, I wouldn't say this in the exam, but like I could have done this straight stick, I'm sure, but like I feel like the robot, when there's so much central adiposity, is, you know, easier in a way. Because
I'm struggling with why you don't say that in the exam. Look, I'm not trained in robotic surgery, okay? But my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, my understanding is if you've got an obese patient, that may assist you with giving you better visualization by using the robot. Am I incorrect with that? Is that a yes or a no?
Yeah, I mean, I think the visualization in general, regardless of capacity, is much better on the robot. I think for me, it just feels like, I don't know if the visualization is necessarily better based on BMI, but especially just longevity of the surgeon, if you're fighting adiposity in cases for years and years and years and years and years versus using the robot to fight the adiposity.
Why not say that? Be open and honest. You say, you know, I could have done this with conventional laparoscopy, but in my hands, with the training that I have, it's been my experience that in these obese patients, I do much better and a much quicker surgically and get better outcomes with the robot. And so although it can be done conventionally, I feel in my hands the robot is better. Why not say that?
Okay.
Would you be comfortable to do so?
Yeah, I'm comfortable saying that because that's like the truth, but I just don't know if that's a strong enough argument. You know, I feel like the robot is...
No, look, your training gives you, every one of you listening in have different trainings, okay? You're comfortable more or less in different areas. And I can tell you, I've worked with tens of thousands of candidates, okay? And I can tell you, it's not uncommon that one candidate will have more expertise in this area and is more comfortable doing X versus Y. And that's okay. As long as you're not putting the patient at undue risk, as long as you're not causing excessive amounts of cost or morbidity, I don't believe, yeah, the robot is a little bit more expensive, but in your hands, it might be that the robot might actually make it cheaper from a financial mm-hmm. point of view. So, mm-hmm. Again, be open and honest. You're making the correct decisions. Be comfortable to share them with the examiner. And then that obviously leads on to what are the pros and cons of robotic surgery, which mm-hmm. you could handle in your sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Okay.
So would you be comfortable with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to talk it through, so I appreciate it.
Sure. And just one last thing. Folks, if any of you who have the word ileus typically, and less likely small bowel obstruction, if you have any of those diagnoses on your case list, you must be able to discuss the management of the two, the etiology of the two, pathophysiology, and basically they're much the same with a few subtle differences here and there. But how do you make the diagnosis between the two? You must be able to discuss the comfortable to discuss the differences between ileus and small bowel obstruction. Okay. Ramsey, any other questions on your side? Oh, just by the way, Ramsey, this was a 173-gram uterus, which is not insubstantial in size. So mm-hmm. that's another reason why the robot might have been an added advantage. I don't know. And this is something important, folks. When it comes to discussions in the exam room on anatomy in a particular case, just remember, it's you and your two GYN examiners in the room. Your two eyeballs out of the six eyeballs in that room were the only ones that gazed upon the anatomy of any given patient. So they can't argue with you in a conversation on local anatomy. So if you want to discuss anatomy, why it's warranted you to do X or Y, that's totally legitimate to say that and use that. And they can't, like I said, they can't argue with you because they weren't there. So just keep that in the back of your mind, okay? Ramsey, do you have any other questions on this case?
I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Folks, since this is the second last teleseminar, I do want to ask you a favor, please. I do it three or four times a year. Can I ask each of you, it'll take 20 seconds, after you put down the phone, immediately send an email to info@examPro.com and just rate this teleseminar on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 being lousy, 5 being excellent. It helps us tremendously maintain our quality. And also, if you want to add any additional comments, we'll be very happy to receive them. Again, just rate us 1 to 5. 1 is lousy, 5 is fantastic. And please do that right away as soon as you put down the phone. The email address is info@examPro.com. All right, folks, before we sign off, one request. Please, can you tell your colleagues who are taking the exam next year, if you feel that we've done a good service for you at ExamPro, please tell them about us. We really do appreciate it. It helps us keep going. And if you could do that, that would be fantastic. The next session that we're going to have will be the last one for this year, for this crop. And it's going to be in 2 weeks' time, on the 26th of November. That'll be the last one of the year, 26th of November. So, folks, I thank you all for attending. Matt, Rashika, and Ramsey, thank you very much. For next time, please, if any of you want, send in some cases, You notice I didn't mention last names. You remain anonymous, and I'd be happy to address any questions you may have. So to the three active volunteers, thank you so much. To everyone else who joined in, I hope you found it was worthwhile, and we'll do this again in 2 weeks' time. Thank you so much, folks. This then concludes our teleseminar. Take care.
Thank you.